We dedicate this presentation to the memory of hundreds of recent martyrs in Iran.
The memory of two of them lingers so vividly in my heart. One was Bahiyeh Khanome Nadiri, the other Professor Manuchehre Hakim. She taught me at Baha'i School and he at Tehran Medical School.
Both, with the rest of the members of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Iran, were martyred 14 years ago. Through this window, we will be able to review the basics of the Baha'i faith. The study of the faith can never be completed, even in a lifetime. Therefore, this presentation should not be assumed to be all-inclusive. From the moment one states he believes in Baha'u'llah, the spark of faith is enkindled. Unless we feed it by deepening our knowledge of the faith, it will be threatened by the winds of tests. To love Baha'u'llah, we have to know him first. Then our love for him will enable us to obey him and become a true believer. Abdu'l-Bahá specifies a true believer as one who says it with the tongue, feels it in the heart, and shows it with action. For an orderly approach, this presentation is divided into 9 topics, each covering related subjects. It is hoped that this overview becomes an inspiration for deepening and better understanding of the Baha'i faith.
Baha'i history. One of unique features of the Baha'i faith is the detailed recorded history of its founder, which is unparalleled in any other previous dispensation. The first subject is the Bab. The Bab means the gate. This title was adopted by the 25-year-old merchant from Shiraz, a southern city in Iran, when, on May 23, 1844, he declared his faith to Mullah Hussein, a 31-year-old learned student of theology. He declared himself to be the gate to a greater manifestation or messenger of God soon to appear. This was very much like John the Baptist, paving the way for the advent of Jesus. The corrupt government and religious leaders of Iran, fearing for the security of their positions, rose up against him. Due to the rapid spread of his teachings, he was soon arrested and kept in captivity. Within the short 6 years of his ministry, about 20,000 of his followers, who were called Babis, were brutally tortured and martyred. The first 18 apostles who recognized him independent of each other were given the title of the Letters of the Living. One of them was a woman called Tahireh, who tore away the customary veil and proclaimed the arrival of the age of dignity and equality for women. The last one, Quddus, though only 22 years old, was ranked second to the Bab. Most of them were martyred. The Bab's martyrdom by a firing squad of 750 men on July 9, 1850, was reported in the Western newspapers. He miraculously escaped the first firing of 750 bullets unharmed.
Although the life and ministry of the Bab were short, his mission had been accomplished by preparing his followers for the coming of Baha'u'llah. The Bab, in his book called Bayan, stated, quote, "Well is it with him who fixeth his gaze upon the order of Baha'u'llah and rendereth thanks unto his Lord," end quote. Baha'u'llah in 1863 declared himself to be the promised one by the Bab and all the messengers of the past. His history will be reviewed as a separate topic.
Abdu'l-Bahá. After the ascension of Baha'u'llah, his will specifically appointed his eldest son Abdu'l-Bahá as the exclusive authority and interpreter of his words. From his birth on the very night of the declaration of the Bab to his passing in 1921, Abdu'l-Bahá's life was dedicated to the service of the cause. Although Baha'u'llah had given him the titles of the Master, the Most Great Branch, and the Mystery of God, after the ascension of Baha'u'llah, he chose the title of Abdu'l-Bahá, meaning the servant of Baha. He shared all the exiles and imprisonments of his father. Additionally, after the ascension of Baha'u'llah, Abdu'l-Bahá was incarcerated for 7 more years. After he was freed, he visited Egypt, Europe, and in 1912, made a 7-month tour of the United States with side trip to Canada, speaking about the cause of Baha'u'llah in places of worship, universities, and homes. He laid the cornerstone of the Baha'i House of Worship in Wilmette, Illinois. He built the Shrine of the Bab on the spot Baha'u'llah had pointed out to him on Mount Carmel in Israel. The House of Worship in Ashgabat in Russian Turkestan was completed during his ministry. There are 26,000 to 27,000 letters and a few books written by him. He is also known as the Center of the Covenant and the exemplar of the teachings of Baha'u'llah. He passed away in 1921 and was laid to rest in a room adjacent to the room where the holy dust of the Bab was laid to rest.
Shoghi Effendi. Baha'u'llah's appointment of Abdu'l-Bahá as the center of the covenant preserved the unity among his followers. Abdu'l-Bahá's will and testament appointed his eldest grandson, Shoghi Effendi, as the guardian of the faith, which further assured this unity. He was the last authorized interpreter of the writings of Baha'u'llah. He was born and raised in the Holy Land. As a youth, he served Abdu'l-Bahá as his secretary for his English correspondence. When he was 24 years old and studying at Oxford University in England, Abdu'l-Bahá passed away. Shoghi Effendi left England to return to Haifa and assume the responsibilities of guardianship of the faith. As the expounder of the faith, he elucidated what Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá had stated. During 36 years of his ministry until his passing in 1957, he guided the growth of the faith by series of teaching plans. Like a foreman, he built the administrative order the way Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá envisioned it. He translated writings of Baha'u'llah into English, built the superstructure over the Shrine of the Bab, built the International Archives Building, beautified the Baha'i properties in Haifa and around the Shrine of Baha'u'llah with extensive gardens. He wrote several books, thousands of letters, and received hundreds of pilgrims. He passed away in London in 1957 at the age of 60 and was laid to rest there. Shoghi Effendi did not appoint a successor because the conditions for this, in Abdu'l-Bahá's will, could not be met. His last worldwide teaching plan was completed in 1963, when 56 national spiritual assemblies elected the Universal House of Justice.
The Universal House of Justice. Baha'u'llah in the Most Holy Book or the Kitab-e Aqdas ordained the establishment of the Universal House of Justice. Abdu'l-Bahá in his will and testament writes, quote, "And to the Most Holy Book everyone must turn, and all that is not expressly recorded therein must be referred to the Universal House of Justice," end quote. And further he writes that, the universal house of justice is, quote, the source of all good and freed from all error, end quote. The 9 members of the House of Justice are elected every 5 years. The last election was in 1993 by 165 National Spiritual Assemblies, which indicates the threefold growth of the administrative order within the past 30 years and 11-fold increase in the number of believers from 500,000 to 5.5 million. The Baha'i Faith, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, has assumed the rank of the most widespread world religion, only second to Christianity. These observations are only an indication for what is yet to unfold.
The Baha'i Era. One of the titles of Muhammad was the Seal of the Prophets. It indicates that the prophetic cycle, when various messengers of God prophesied the coming of the Day of God, was ended with Islam. With the declaration of the Bab in 1844, the Baha'i cycle, or the cycle of fulfillment, began, which will last 500,000 years. The first era of this cycle is the Baha'i era, which will last at least 1,000 years, after which another manifestation will appear. Here we realize that according to the teachings of Baha'u'llah, the revelations of God are not final but progressive. As long as mankind exists, it will need divine guidance. The Baha'i era is divided into 3 ages, the heroic, the formative, and the golden age.
The heroic or apostolic age. This period of time is from the declaration of the Bab in 1844 to passing of Abdu'l-Bahá in 1921. It was the time of heroic deeds and great sacrifices, which also brought great victories. The early believers of this period are called the Dawnbreakers. The number of martyrs by the time of the ministry of Abdu'l-Bahá reached up to 30,000 believers. By studying the history of the 3 central figures of the faith, the Bab, Baha'u'llah, and Abdu'l-Bahá, and the dramatic and tragic events of this period, we can learn about the roots of our precious faith and how it was watered by the blood of thousands of martyrs.
The formative or transitional age. This period of time began with the guardianship of Shoghi Effendi in 1921 after the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá. During this period, the institutions of the administrative order of the faith were established and will continue to grow and mature until the arrival of the Golden Age. In this critical period, the old world order will be replaced by the new world order. Great turmoil and calamities will bring mankind to its knees. The tests and challenges for the believers are numerous. In this age, by rhythmic action of crisis and victories, expansion and consolidation, the foundation will be laid for the Golden Age, when the kingdom of God on earth will be established. Our duty is to rise and serve and be confident about the invincibility of the cause and its triumph. However, it is crucial that we first teach ourselves and let Baha'u'llah's words transform our lives. Then and only then our lives will become magnetized with His love and our words will attract. To coordinate the activities of the believers, there have been a number of teaching plans by Shoghi Effendi and the House of Justice. These plans, which are usually identified by their terms, such as 3-year or 7-year plan, shall continue until the eventual spiritual conquest of the planet. The direction for all these plans comes from 14 tablets written by Abdu'l-Bahá in 1916 and 1917, called the tablets of the divine plan addressed to the believers in the United States and Canada.
The Golden Age. Shoghi Effendi divided the Baha'i history into three ages. The last age, or the Golden Age, is the time of the most great peace, when the human race attains maturity. In that age, the world will be ruled under the laws of the Most Holy Book, or the Kitab-e Aqdas. The earth will be one country, and mankind its citizens. Prejudices of all kinds will be eliminated, as well as the extremes of wealth and poverty. There will be a world language and script. Time does not permit further elaboration. All that can be said is that the Golden Age of the Baha'i era has been the vision of every prophet of the past who prophesied it in various terms.
The second topic is an overview of the history of Baha'u'llah. He was born on November 12, 1817 in Tehran, Iran, to a wealthy and noble family. His given name was Hossein Ali. From childhood, he showed his innate knowledge and wisdom. Though unusual for a son of nobility, he showed deep love and concern for people, particularly the poor and the sick. He soon became known as the father of the poor. At the age of 18, he married Asiye Khanom, also from a prominent and wealthy family. When 22 years old, his father died, leaving his position in the king's court open. The position was offered to Baha'u'llah, but to the surprise of the prime minister, he refused it. When he was 27, the first disciple of the Bab, Mullah Hossein, a few months after the Bab's declaration, brought a message from the Bab which was given to Baha'u'llah through a third person. Upon reading it, he accepted the cause of the Bab and became one of the prominent promoters of that cause. 4 years later, when the Bab was in prison, Baha'u'llah arranged for a gathering of the believers in the resort village of Badasht. Also present in that conference were Qudus and Tahereh. During that conference with 81 followers, Baha'u'llah gave each one a new name, such as Qudus and Tahereh. For himself, he chose the title of Baha, which means glory. At this conference, a clear break was made with the old laws and traditions, and the beginning of a new age was announced. It shocked a few who thought the Bab's faith was another sect of Islam. In Badasht, only Qudus and Tahereh recognized Baha'u'llah. Mullah Hossein was not able to be at that conference, but he also knew who Baha'u'llah really was.
Baha'u'llah and the Bab did not physically meet. In the process of promoting the faith of the Bab, Baha'u'llah was imprisoned 3 times and bastinadoed once. Bastinado is the humiliating and painful punishment of lashing the soles of the feet. As thousands became followers of the Bab, persecutions and killing became the response of the government and the clergy. About 20,000 followers were martyred, and finally the Bab was executed by a firing squad in 1850. 2 years later, 3 crazy and revengeful Babi youth tried to kill the king, which failed. All the prominent Babi leaders, including Baha'u'llah, were arrested. Baha'u'llah with 30 other followers were put in an underground dungeon called the Siyah Chawl, or the Black Pit, That stench-filled dungeon had only one opening to the outside, and that was its entrance. There were no sanitary facilities, and many of the 150 worst criminals had no clothes. It was in that dark and gloomy environment where Baha'u'llah received his mission or intimation in form of visions and dreams. A general massacre of the Babis followed. Every day, one of the Babis in the dungeon was called by the executioner to be butchered in a most brutal way. Baha'u'llah providentially was protected and freed from charges of plotting the attempt on the life of the king. He spent 4 months in that Siyah Chal and was freed in December 1852, pending his immediate exile to Baghdad, which belonged to the neighboring Turkish Empire. He was ill with deadly typhoid fever and leech wounds on his legs. Upon the family's request, the government consented to a delay of 1 month. Partly recovered, he and his family started that very difficult journey in January, inadequately prepared. They had to cross the snow-bound mountain passes of western Iran on foot or mule.
1 year after their arrival in Baghdad, because of the disunity his jealous half-brother Mirza Yahya was causing, he went into seclusion in the mountains of Soleimaniye. He took very little provisions and spent 2 years there. Upon the discovery of his whereabouts, he consented to the request of the family and returned to Baghdad. His total stay in Baghdad, including those 2 years, was 10 years. He was the object of opposition of the Persian consul and the local clergy. Both had plans to kill him, but did not succeed. Then the decree was issued for his exile to the capital of the Turkish Empire, Constantinople, now known as Istanbul. In April 1863, in preparation for his departure, he went to a garden outside the city gates, which is known as the Garden of Rezvan, meaning paradise. There he declared to be the one promised by the Bab and all the prophets of the past, in other words, the supreme manifestation. In about 4 months after arrival in Istanbul, another decree was issued for his exile to Adrianople, which is in the most eastern corner of the European continent. These exiles were particularly instigated by the Persian ambassador. 1 year after his arrival in Adrianople, he was almost fatally poisoned by his treacherous half-brother, but recovered and was left with shaking hands for the rest of his life. During 5 years of his stay in Adrianople, he proclaimed his cause worldwide by addressing the kings and ecclesiastics. These rulers had absolute power over their subjects. He warned them that if they rejected his message, their power would be taken away from them. And this exactly happened to all of them, except Queen Victoria of England, who said, quote, "If this is of God, it will endure. If not, it can do no harm," end quote.
His final exile was planned for the total extinction of him and his cause. It was to the disease-ridden penal colony of Akka, which was the Bastille of the Turkish Empire. It took place in 1868. He spent the last 24 years of his ministry in Akka, and the largest volume of his writings were revealed during those years. At the beginning, the restrictions were severe, and he was placed in a solitary cell behind bars. As gradually the restrictions eased up, he moved to small houses. It was in one of these houses where the most holy book, or the Kitab-e Aqdas, was revealed in the summer of 1873. Slowly, Baha'u'llah's enemies' attitude changed, and he was allowed to leave the walled city of Akka. He spent the last 12 years of his earthly life in the mansion of Bahji, which means delight. This mansion, which was built by an oasis, had been abandoned by the owner due to outbreak of cholera. His followers had easy access to him, and thousands of them established his faith in Iran and the neighboring countries. Baha'u'llah ascended on May 29, 1892, after a brief illness. He was laid to rest the same day in a room adjacent to the mansion, which is called the Shrine of Baha'u'llah. It is the point of adoration or the Qibla for the Baha'is of the world and one of the sites for pilgrimage. His writings, either in his own handwriting or by his amanuensis, which means secretary, total 15,000. Some are the size of a book, such as the Kitab-e-Aqdas, Kitab-e-Iran, and his last book, The Epistle to the Son of the Wolf, and some in form of tablets and letters. The original of these are all preserved at the Baha'i International Archives in Haifa, Israel. To name a few of his writings, he wrote The Hidden World, Seven Valleys and Four Valleys, and the Book of Certitude or the Kitab-e-Iran while in Baghdad. Towards the end of his stay in Adrianople and then in Akka, he addressed the kings, emperors, and the ecclesiastics. His major tablets, which were revealed after the Kitab-e-Aqdas and constitute a supplement to the Most Holy Book, are Ishraqat, the Splendors, Bisharat, Glad Tidings, Tajalliyat, Effulgences, Tarazat, Ornaments, Kalimat-e Ferdowsiye, Words of Paradise, Lohe Hikmat, Tablet of Wisdom, Lohe Aqdas, the Most Holy Tablet, also known as the Tablet to the Christians, Lohe Maqsood, the Tablet of Maqsood, and Lohe Dunya, or the Tablet of the World. The gleanings from the writings of Baha'u'llah are selections translated and compiled by Shoghi Effendi, the Guardian.
Baha'u'llah's writings, as rich and beautiful as they are, were revealed with unusual speed without a single word ever changed. His revelation was written either in his own handwriting or by a scribe. After a few days, Baha'u'llah would summon his scribe and repeat what had been dictated so the scribe could check for any errors the scribe might have made. In addition to revealing in the highest Persian style of prose, he also revealed in flawless Arabic, a most difficult language which he never studied, thus showing his innate knowledge. His will was called Kitab-e-Ahd, or the Book of Covenant, which was read 9 days after his ascension and clearly appointed Abdu'l-Bahá as his successor.
The third topic is the spiritual teachings. Before we discuss various subjects under this topic, it is essential that we bear in mind the statement of the Guardian that religious truth is not absolute but relative. In other words, Baha'u'llah's teachings, though profound, are revealed only to our limited capacity. The first subject is the nature of God. Throughout ages, all peoples have believed in a higher power. This has been called God, Khuda, Jehovah, Ahura Mazda, and Allah, all of which are the names of the same Creator. The essence of God is unknowable even by the messengers, but they like a perfect mirror, reflect God's attributes. Through his messengers or manifestations, we recognize God as just, merciful, loving, forgiving, and his many other attributes. All the messengers have taught that man is created in the image of God. That means man has potential to reflect the attributes of God. While it is difficult to learn about God, Baha'u'llah states that God is closer to man than his life vain.
Station of the Manifestation. The manifestations of God are part of the covenant of God with man, that he would never leave us unguided. If we think of God as the sun, humanity is like mirrors that can reflect the light of the sun to a greater or lesser degree, depending on the amount of dust or imperfections in them. The manifestations are like a perfectly clear and polished mirror that can reflect the full radiance of the sun. Again, we are not talking about the unknowable essence of God, but what is revealed of him. The soul of a person begins at the time of conception, but souls of the manifestations are pre-existent. In their nature as man, they are servants to God and have physical limitations, but as the mouthpiece of God, speak with the authority of God. They are all equal and reflect the same spirit, but the intensity of their revelation varies according to the capacity of mankind at the time. Because of pre-existence of their soul, they have all knowledge of the past and future.
Oneness of religion. In the past, the concept of people was that all religions other than their own were false. Baha'u'llah explains that the religion of God is one, but has been taught by many manifestations. Why many? During and shortly after the time when a manifestation appears, people have the pure teachings of God. With passage of time, this pure mirror becomes covered with the dust of man's imaginings. Then comes the need for a new manifestation. Each manifestation brings two types of teachings. One is the eternal spiritual teachings such as brotherly love, which will never change. The other is the social teachings, which vary according to the changing needs and capacity of people. The manifestations do not teach all they know, but teach only what people can understand.
Twin duties of man. In the opening paragraph of the Kitab-e-Aqdas, Baha'u'llah states that man's first duty is to recognize Baha'u'llah as the manifestation of God, and the second duty is to obey him. Neither of these duties are accepted without the other. This is so different from the past concepts which claim that just accepting a manifestation is sufficient for salvation. Of course, there are those of the other extreme who claim that doing good deeds is enough without needing to believe in a messenger of God. Baha'u'llah is the manifestation of God for this age. In the Kitab-e-Aqdas, he states, quote, "Observe my commandments for the love of my beauty," end quote. His laws, instead of binding man with limitations, will bring true liberty, which comes only by submission to the will of God. When studying the Baha'i writings, should you come across a matter which is not agreeable to you, please do not balk. Be aware of limitation of our understanding. How often with deeper study, the meaning becomes obvious. In other words, trust the wisdom of the divine author.
Independent investigation. In the past, people believed in something because their family, friends, or religious leaders told them to. Therefore, it was often blind and unquestioning. Baha'u'llah teaches and stresses that each person must investigate truth for himself and come to his own conclusion without relying on someone else's thinking. Of course, it takes courage, effort, and detachment. Detachment means to free one's self from all barriers such as love or hate, as well as one's social status and knowledge. The blind following in the past also has been the cause of division and disunity. When man-made differences are put aside, one easily can see that truth is truth, whatever the source and wherever it is taught.
Sacrifice. Sacrifice is a sign of love. The manifestations of God have sacrificed their lives and comfort because of their love for humanity. First, we have to know Baha'u'llah better. The better we recognize him, the more we wish to obey him. And in this righteous cycle, our love increases for him. The word sacrifice not always means giving one's life. We have many opportunities to show our love by sacrificing our selfish desires, our time, energy, and material goods. In other words, living a Baha'i life, teaching and serving the faith, should become our way of demonstrating our love for Baha'u'llah. May we be protected from the vicious cycle of neglect and drifting away.
Recitation, prayer, and study. It is a law of Baha'u'llah to recite his writings twice daily, in the morning and evening. This should be done when we can concentrate and meditate without getting tired. The obligatory prayer will be discussed later. Reading or chanting the prayers revealed by the central figures have special creative power. All prayers are when we talk to God to praise Him or to supplicate. But the recitation is for the words of Baha'u'llah talking to us. Study of the writings is for our deepening and nurturing our faith. Baha'u'llah instructs us in these words, quote, "Immerse yourselves in the ocean of my words, that ye may unravel its secrets and discover all the pearls of wisdom that lie hid in its depth," end quote. Whether prayer, recitation, or study, they all must be followed by action. In the process of studying and discussing, we are aware that we could make personal interpretation of the writings provided it is not contrary to the authorized interpretations by Abdu'l-Bahá and Shawhi Effendi, as well as elucidations of the Universal House of Justice. However, we must never impose our thoughts on others or engage in dissension. The practice of past religions, which gave ascendancy to the best debaters and caused divisions, is eliminated by Baha'u'llah. First, the authorized interpreters were appointed by him, and additionally, he has explicitly forbidden contention and conflict on any subject.
Work as worship. In this age, Baha'u'llah has raised work done in the spirit of service to the rank of worship. No longer is one's job separated from his religious life. Having some type of occupation is a command of God. To the question of unsalaried work, such as homemaking, the House of Justice states, quote, "Homemaking is a highly honorable and responsible work of fundamental importance for mankind," end quote. Everyone who is physically able must work. At any job, one should do it to the best of one's ability, since as worship one has to give only one's best to God. What a wonderful world it will be when everyone will do their best.
Life after death. When the body dies, the soul is untouched. Man's body is like a mirror and the soul is connected with it, the same way as the rays of the sun are reflected in a mirror. When the mirror shatters, the light is still existing. During this life, our body is a host or custodian to our soul to nurture it with perfections in preparation for rebirth into the next world. As the womb of the mother is a temporary residence for the baby to develop its limbs and organs, so is our body in relation to our soul. The baby, while developing in the womb, has no awareness of this world. However, through the bounty of God, the manifestations of God continue to give us guidance in preparation for the next life. After death, the soul will progress in the world of God unhindered by physical limitation of the body. Therefore, the soul will not reincarnate in another physical form. Prayer and charitable acts in memory of the departed will help the progress of their souls.
The fourth topic is social teachings. The world is now beginning to understand and feel the need for many of the social teachings of the Baha'i Faith, which were revealed by Baha'u'llah more than a century ago. The oneness of mankind. Baha'u'llah, appearing at the age of maturity of mankind, has placed oneness of mankind as a pivot to all of his social teachings. It is a broad term with several aspects. One is that we are all members of the human family, created by the same God who loves us all. Also, it means each person has a soul capable of reflecting the attributes of God. The third aspect is the realization of how our Creator wishes us to be. Therefore, we work hard and strive to bring about true unity among the citizens of earth, so hunger, poverty, and wars end, and the kingdom of God on earth shall become established.
The importance of the family. These days, people have different ideas about the importance and purpose of family. Baha'u'llah teaches that the family is the most basic unit and the building block of society. If the families are not healthy, loving, unified, and spiritual, the society will not be healthy. Baha'i family life begins with the marriage of a man and woman with these vows, quote, "We will all verily abide by the will of God," end quote. A central purpose of marriage is to raise children. Baha'u'llah states, quote, "Enter into wedlock, O people, that ye may bring forth one who will make mention of me amid my servants," end quote. Spiritual and academic education of children is a serious obligation of the parents. Abdul Baha states that those who neglect this, quote, "shall be held responsible and worthy of reproach in the presence of the stern Lord," end quote.
Elimination of prejudice. Prejudice is when one makes up his mind before knowing all the facts. Also, it is when a person refuses to change his opinion when the facts show that his opinion is wrong. These two are the roots of common prejudices about sex, color, nationality, religion, wealth, and poverty. Prejudice is often the result of fear and ignorance. Because of these two factors, people create walls of prejudice to protect themselves. Unfortunately, these walls cause injustice and oppression. Racial and religious prejudice have caused and will continue to be the cause of bloodshed and destruction until mankind heeds Baha'u'llah's teaching. Quote, "Know ye not why we created you all from the same dust, that no one should exalt himself over the other." End quote. And in another passage, quote, "Consort with the followers of all religions in a spirit of friendliness and fellowship." End quote. Baha'i gatherings are examples of unity in diversity.
The agreement of science and religion. The two most powerful forces in human life are religion and science. Both are channels to truth and necessary for the progress of mankind. Baha'u'llah teaches that true religion and true science are in complete harmony. Since the truth is one, they cannot disagree. If they seem to disagree, it is because man does not yet understand something properly, or all the facts are not yet known. Baha'u'llah warns that if religion denies science and the proven facts, it is superstition. And if the application of scientific knowledge is not guided by spiritual and moral values, it can cause destruction. At times, one may not understand the wisdom of a certain Baha'i law. In such times, one should trust divine wisdom. In the Kitab-e Aqdas, Baha'u'llah states, quote, "Weigh not the Book of God with such standard and sciences as are current amongst you, for the Book itself is the unerring balance established amongst men." End quote.
World peace. Baha'u'llah, in fulfillment of all prophecies of the past, has brought God's plan for building a peaceful world. He stated that world peace will be achieved in two stages. First will be the period of the lesser peace, when wars end and all nations will be united politically. In this stage, the world will be like a functioning body but without spirit. When the Baha'is breathe the spirit of life or the love of Baha'u'llah into this body, then it wakes up, and the stage of the most great peace, or the golden age, begins. In other words, the world will be politically, economically, and spiritually united. By living a Baha'i life in every aspect, each believer will be doing his share to promote the coming of the most great peace. ¶¶